This afternoon, I thought I would talk a bit about the role of faith in our practice. Faith definitely plays a role in our practice. I mean, I think everybody here has the faith that this is a good thing to be doing on a Sunday afternoon, because you certainly could be somewhere else if you wanted to be. And it's useful to reflect on what the origins of faith are, what its nature is, and where it leads. One place where faith or sadha comes up in the suttas is in a sequence that's sometimes called transcendent dependent origination, which begins with the usual ignorance conditioning volitional formations, which condition consciousness, which conditions name and form, which conditions the six sense bases, then contact, feeling, craving, clinging, becoming, birth, and then instead of the usual old age and death, it goes to suffering, dukkha. And that's the first half. But the second half is that suffering is approximate cause for faith. And then faith in turn is approximate cause for gladness, which is in turn a proximate cause for rapture, and in turn tranquility, happiness, sukha, concentration, samadhi, then knowledge and vision of things as they really are, then from there disenchantment, dispassion, liberation, and the knowledge of the destruction of the taints. So this is a pretty complete teaching, because it goes from the very beginning of the problem to the very end of the problem. And right in the middle is suffering is approximate cause for faith. And certainly suffering can cause all kinds of other things besides faith. I think in a different passage, the Buddha says there are two potential results of suffering. One is bewilderment and just beating one's breast and lamenting. And the other is search. Does anyone know a way or two out of this suffering? And also there's more than one kind of, I mean, many people are searching, but not everyone is, we're certainly not all searching in the same way. And the suttas divide searches into two types. And actually the Buddha, this is one of the relatively few cases where the Buddha reflects on his life before he was enlightened, before he left home. And he describes two kinds of searches, the noble search and the ignoble search. And in the ignoble search is where someone being themselves subject to birth, aging, sickness, death, defilement, or sorrow and defilement, seeks things which are also subject to those very same qualities. And the Buddha gives in his, the Buddha reflects on examples of, you know, one's wife and children, family, and then in their day, I guess, male and female slaves. And then all of the possessions and status items of his day, things like cattle and sheep, horses, or pigs, fowl, horses, mares, elephants, cattle, horses, mares, gold and silver. And now we have, since 2,500 years later, there's a whole lot more things that one can seek that are still subject to origination and decay. But this whole, and this is a rather powerful analysis. The Bodhisattva has recognized I'm subject to these problems, and it would be ignoble for me to seek things that are also subject to those same problems. There's no way of escaping that way. So there's no final end of suffering there. But then the noble search is to seek the unborn, unaging, unailing, deathless, sorrowless, and undefiled, the supreme security from bondage, Nibbana. And the Bodhisattva had this insight before he left the home life, and obviously something in his culture, upbringing, what he saw, must have inspired him. There's a legendary story about the four heavenly messengers, which in the suttas is ascribed to a previous Buddha. But the fourth heavenly messenger is a samana, and that's often the cause for the arising of faith. For myself, I can remember when I was a teenager, late teens, I was very, very interested in Gandhi. And one of Gandhi's many quotable phrases was, renounce and enjoy. And there's many pictures of Gandhi smiling in his dhoti, and he seemed to understand that. But Gandhi was killed 30 years before I was born, so I had no chance to meet him myself, and I didn't actually. So, on the other hand, I did meet Ajahn Amaro at Spirit Rock, and he happened to be leading a day-long on renunciation. And I can remember him just grinning ear to ear, talking about all the things that monks renounce and how this actually makes life simpler. And he obviously understood what renounce and enjoy means. And that was, yeah, I basically, after that single day long, monk was on my list of potential career choices. That was it. It's like, wow. And yeah, bright faith like that usually takes, you know, it usually takes a while to steep and mature, because it needs to be tempered by a lot of realism, which, I mean, I didn't know much at all about the kind of monastic life that Ajahn Amaro led at that point when I was going to his day long, but I was inspired to put forth some effort to find out. And back to the nature of faith, it's faith in Buddhism is a bit different, perhaps, than faith in theistic religions, although I can't say I understand all the nuances of every type of theistic religion. But it's in many ways a working hypothesis is good enough. You know, you had the working hypothesis, you know, that coming here on a Sunday afternoon would be a good thing to do. And that's enough to get you here. And in many ways, faith is its primary role is to motivate action, motivate skillful action. One description of the kinds of things that it is useful to have faith in is the description of mundane right view. So this comes up repeatedly as one of two different definitions of right view. This is what it essentially is these are the views that it's very useful to hold if you want to really dedicate your life to the spiritual path. And so the aspects of it are is that there is what is given, what is offered, what is sacrificed. There are fruits and results of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are in the world good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins who, having realized for themselves with direct knowledge, make known this world and the other world. And in some ways, actually starting at the end is a useful way to look at things, because that explains often why people have faith. As you see people who have really deep moral integrity, and who seem to have really changed their lives for the better, and they hold these views. And so, you know, if I want to be like them, why shouldn't I? And again, you don't see any selfishness in them or pettiness that would cause them to, you know, to try to misrepresent the truth on these matters. And certainly, the Buddha himself was impressive enough to many people didn't have any trouble doubting that he had direct knowledge of these things. And so the most fundamental aspect of it is, there are fruits and results of good and bad actions. That having faith that the intentional quality of our actions, which is the Buddha's definition of karma. Actions carried out under the influence of intentions involving greed, hatred, and delusion will have negative results now and into the future. And actions carried out under the influence of mental states conditioned by non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion will have positive results. And this clears away, this faith in this clears, really simplifies life, because it means you can pay attention to your mental state right now and have faith that that's really important, and you can pay attention there instead of trying to figure out how to manipulate the world so that you can eke out as much happiness for yourself as you can. Which that second view is both confusing and petty, whereas the first is simple and noble. So it's our qualities of mind that are of ultimate importance. And then the other aspects of that, there is this world and the other world. Just a sense that here the Buddha decided not to go into the details of what happens after death, because one doesn't need, that's not essential, and one can get very much caught up in the details. But if you're really looking to dedicate your life to the spiritual path, it's essential to recognize that the results of what we do continue on after we die, and that in some way or another we experience them. But again, it's not so. And the Buddha here is just laying out the bare minimum. So he's not talking, not even making a statement about how many next lives there are or what the details are. Just that we shouldn't end our calculus of what will be of benefit for ourselves and others at death. And then also that there are mother and father. There are people, our parents being the primary examples, there are people we really owe a debt of gratitude towards. And we have a responsibility there. And it's actually repaying our teacher's kindness is very important. And in some ways, I think of, if I wasn't a monk, sort of the next, probably the next best thing I could do would be to put my effort towards caring for my parents. Just that sense of recognition of a debt of gratitude, and also caring for our teachers is a form of unselfishness, and it's not proliferative. It's not about making myself big or special. It's just looking to other people and caring for them. And again, it's I think many, many people aren't yet sort of looking for any sort of final solution to suffering. And the Buddha recognized that, and that's totally fine. And so this faith is still very useful in that you recognize that the very first one, there is what is given, what is offered, what is sacrificed, which means generosity. Generosity has results. It brightens the heart now, and it sends waves of goodness out into the world. It's giving what we have instead of consuming it for ourselves is a very simple act of unselfishness. And you have to discover this for yourself, but it's actually what makes you feel wealthy. As long as you're trying to consume things yourself, there's always a sense that's always unfulfilling. There's always a sense of lack. But when you can give things away, that brightens the heart, and it's like, oh, I have so much. I can give this, I can give this away. And then one of the highest forms of gifts that we can give is restraining our behavior so that we don't harm other people. This has very positive consequences for us. And another sutta describes how, for instance, one who refrains from taking the life of living beings, who refrains from getting others to take the life of living beings, who praises restraint in terms of killing beings and does not approve of acts of killing living beings, these actions bring about safety for innumerable beings. And similarly, again, that comes back, and that's what that provides safety for ourselves. It's quite remarkable to see, and in some ways not at all surprising, to see how tame the animals have become at Abhayagiri, because they know this is a place where for 20 years they haven't been hunted. And so they're just today I walked back out of the Black Rock Trail, and there was a doe and a young buck just hanging around the women's bathhouse. And neither one of them ran away from me. And so the other aspect of faith in Buddhist practice is that when the goal or the faith is a means to an end. It's not an ultimate goal in itself. The goal is to actually realize the end of suffering that you had faith in to begin with. And this is something that can be done with effort. But if one didn't have faith, one wouldn't make the effort and you'd never find it. So much of the practice consists of letting go of the way we want to do things and paying attention to what the teachings are and what the examples of our teachers have been and how we can practice in that way. And it definitely, this isn't, I don't think the practice is easy for either lay people or monastics to sustain year after year. And so it's definitely useful to contemplate how to nourish the faith that we have, whether that's through listening to talks from from the teachers that we respect, visiting them when we have an opportunity, for us here, I think Lungpa Pasino has said that one of the advantages of living in a monastic community is that, yeah, when you're feeling down, it's most likely that there are other people who aren't, and vice versa. So we all sort of pull each other through a lot of stuff. And again, for the lay people, the opportunity to visit a monastery can be quite inspiring. And yeah, I just received an email today about someone who had come here to visit for, I think it was about 4 days, and was very inspired. She said she's already, you know, just what she found inspiring was our morning work meetings, which for those of us who are go to attend them day after day after day, they can get really boring. And, you know, and frustrating because of, like, how much time do we have to spend figuring out where that truck key is? How much time does it take to split all this up and organize all this? But the woman who came thought that that was very inspiring to see people to see how people cooperate like that. I'm not entirely. She may live in a bit of a community herself, and she said that we're already incorporating some of what we learned at Abhayagiri, and she brought back 5 Dhamma books from here that she's passing around. So, inspiring. For me, I find the suttas inspiring, so I've been just reading the reading chapters from the Samyutta Nikaya and just the I find, it's pretty amazing how consistent the Buddha's teachings are and how focused they are on just two things, a dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and the end of dukkha. And the Buddha was very consistently would not answer questions that pertain to speculative matters, but at the same time was very clear about this is the path and that's not the path. And one also has a sense that, this is out of a mission of compassion. That was what the Buddha realized he could do for the world, is to explain this path as best he possibly could and try to clarify it as much as he could, because, almost all of us confuse it. And I sometimes think about this like quantum mechanics. Actually, it's very hard for someone who hasn't truly studied quantum mechanics in depth to actually explain it properly or to explain anything. As soon as you say something, it's probably a mistake. And this is because there's all sorts of questions you could ask. The way we usually ask questions is not helpful for quantum mechanics. So many other things we assume are just don't apply when one is dealing with systems on those scales. And quantum mechanics is equally precise in what it does. It can predict the results of experiments probabilistically. So if you describe an experiment in sufficient detail, you can at least predict it, or again have the formulas, even maybe you can't solve them. But if you ask which way did that particle go, sometimes that's an unanswerable question. But you sure wouldn't, similarly, the Buddha's teaching is about suffering and dukkha and the cessation of dukkha. But if you ask, who is it that suffers? The Buddha, that's not a valid question, is the reply, at least in the context of dependent origination. And at least to me, that provides quite a bit of faith that the teacher of these teachings understood something, and to the extent that it seemed, there's an internal consistency that so often gets confused in my own mind, and I think in other people's minds as well. But going back to the teachings of the Pali Canon, it seems clearer than I can think, and focused on something very important. I don't think everyone, not everyone reads the Nidana Samyutta and experiences faith and joy. And I remember when I got the Samyutta Nikaya, my parents sent it to me as a layperson. And I could read the chapters on verses, But when I got into the later chapters on more doctrinal subjects, I was just totally lost. So, but that's how it is. You learn, you pay attention and learn something, and what was formerly confusing becomes less confusing. And again, that in itself, just noticing, having faith in our own capacity to learn, that if we put forth effort, we can make changes and learn from our experience and suffer less than we did in the past. So, yeah, wishing that people do have a opportunity to learn and experience the fruits of this practice. So, I will leave it here.
Sadhu, 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 anumodami.
Right.